This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Thank you for joining us. Clark Walton is our guest on this segment. We are talking about digital forensics, and the conversation is going to be kind of applicable to several of the cases that we're following here, including Stephen Smith, including Brian Walsh, including Brian Koberger. Anytime a cell phone has been involved in anything, really, this is going to be interesting information to absorb as far as understanding how these systems work. I want to talk about triangulation. I want to talk about pinging. And I want to talk about GPS tracking and the differences between all those things, because they are very different things. How accurate they are, how much they pinpoint you to one specific place. But before we get to that, I want to start in with Brian Walsh. And obviously, this is the man, if you've been playing along at home, who did all the Google searches on how to dispose of a body and then how to get insurance settlements or claims answered. Within like 12 hours of his wife being murdered, they still have not found the body. But blood in the house, murder weapons in the house, the Google searches allegedly done by him, that very, very incriminating. Obviously, those are on the surface. What other things would they be looking for digitally, forensically on that case to really just put the nail in the coffin on a case like that one of Brian Walsh?
Well, you know, that you've already seen, I think, in the news, you know, they're talking about pulling, and this case happened sort of really close in time to when law enforcement became aware of it. And so it sounds like they were able to pull certain data from the carriers, you know, the cell phone carriers, mm-hmm. as to when his wife's phone was pinging and in what area it was pinging and so forth. When I say pinging, it's that technology, that's a whole other discussion we could have, you know, relative to GPS, but it puts a phone in sort of a general area, and, you know, the phone being put in a certain area and then the phone sort of going dead, that's all very suspicious circumstantial evidence, as to her phone. And then, you know, obviously with his phone, separate and apart from the child's iPad and the searches that we saw there, if he's carrying a phone with him as he's doing some things that have been alleged out in the press, you know, driving around to these various locations and so forth, that's going to be potentially recording information on his phone about his whereabouts and so forth as well.
Let's talk about pinging a little bit, because I know that's been brought up in the Walsh case here a bit, also in the Koberger case more specifically. And it does appear to be, you know, to the layman out here, pretty good evidence. The cell phone tower triangulation, the pinging to the towers and such. How much of if we're talking a bullet point, a target spot where they're trying to put someone on the map, how close does a cell phone get in terms of accuracy and placing a person at point A or point B through pinging or the triangulation?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't really, none of the technology that we deal with is really true sort of triangulation, but I, you know, it does, a ping might put you in a certain proximity to a cell tower. And remember, your phone, we talk about your, I'm holding my phone as if you can see it for some reason. But you know, you're holding your phone and it's got several different types of antenna on it. It's got your wireless carrier antenna. It's got your Bluetooth. It's got your Wi-Fi and maybe near what we call NFC or near field communication. So it's constantly talking to the world through four or five different means, or attempting to. And so if you're talking about that cell carrier antenna, the one that's being used to place calls and talk to, you know, Verizon or AT&T or whomever, you're generally talking about square miles. You're not going to put somebody, particularly in a more rural environment where cell towers are more spread out, mm-hmm. You may get a ping off a tower and you may get a general direction that ping is coming from. And when you look at a map of towers, you might be able to say, okay, well, this was potentially closer to this other tower. Why was it pinging off of this one? There are things like that you got to figure out, you know, with Koberger, if you're in a very rural area, and the land is flat or the land is rocky, you know, and there are mountains, you've got to take all obstructions. You've got to take all those things into account. So it is a little bit of the different ways that your phone can put you in a certain location. That is probably the least certain. It's really good for putting me in a certain city relative to another city that's 50 miles away. It's not really great for putting me in one city block versus the next city block over.
What about the GPS information that comes from phones? I totally understand the pinging thing and how that will get you in a general vicinity, but with the phones that we have today, maybe versus what was being used 50, you know, 10 years ago. I always just assume, and maybe I'm wrong in assuming this, that my GPS is always on, that there's something, some program somewhere where somebody, if they absolutely needed to, could find that device based on the GPS data. Is that incorrect to assume that, or are those pieces of information always going out there on, you know, most devices?
It depends on your settings on your phone. You know, could somebody being a carrier or an agency or whomever potentially tap into that GPS component and figure out where you are just because your phone is turned on? I always it's not paranoia if it's actually correct, right? And so I always sort of err on the side of being a little paranoid in that regard. So that, you know, the technology is certainly there. And cell phone enabled, you know, the GPS on the phones is generally very accurate. You know, in contrast to what we just talked about with the cell towers, you're talking about no more than 1 to 200 feet accuracy on the GPS. And typically, I mean, in my experience, it's better than 100 feet accuracy. So that technology is good for putting me in, you know, one city block potentially versus the next.
Is that something that can be looked at? I mean, what would they be looking at if we were to take a Koberger or a Walsh, for example, and want to know exactly where you were at a specific time? Is that data on the phone in terms of a log of, you know, showing where this device was at any given point in time?
Yeah, as a matter of course, probably not. You know, is there a running log every couple of seconds of the GPS that's stored on your device? Probably not. But then are we looking for, certain GPS applications or apps that use GPS? Direction, you know, Waze, Apple Maps, you know, pick one, Google Maps, may be logging information on a pretty consistent basis. Whether you can pull that off a device is going to depend. And then other sort of innocuous things people don't necessarily think about. But, you know, if I've got the factory settings on my iPhone and I take a picture with that phone or take a video with that phone, I may be logging the GPS coordinates inside that picture or that video that a forensic examiner would certainly see, you know, if they looked at the device later.
Interesting. There's so much to understand about all this in terms of what our devices do, what they don't do, because there's obviously all different ways of thinking about this, but only one, you know, is obviously fact, depending on your device, depending on your character. Lots of moving parts to this. Do you foresee any more information coming out on the cell phones of either Brian Walsh or Koberger in trial that pertain more to what we were just talking about, GPS locating versus just the cell phone triangulation and such that we've already heard about to put them, I guess, more in compromising positions or geographic locations that actually connect them to the crimes?
I'd say it's very likely. I don't know. You know, I'm not the examiner looking at those devices, but, you know, the things that we have seen in the public my understanding is there is a gag order in place in the Koberger case. And what we're out in the public opining about are things, you know, the probable cause affidavits and so forth that were sort of initially filed. And so I would imagine the government has a great deal more information, you know, some of it potentially more helpful for the government's case than others. But certainly in that matter, maybe in the Walsh matter, I haven't followed the legal procedure on that one quite as closely. The initial things that we're seeing are affidavits that are put forth upon arrest and things like that, that may not be the entire government case, right? There are probably more facts out there than we know.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
You like the show? Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the cases that we're following for you. right here. Apple Podcasts is giving it an ad-free experience. Do go and check that out. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.